Warning. This story contains details that may be distressing to some readers. Women had been vanishing for decades from Vancouver's poverty-stricken downtown Eastside before police found a way onto a trash-strewn property doubling as a pig farm in a Vancouver suburb. It quickly became Canada's largest crime scene. Those of us in the courtroom for Robert William, Willie, Picton's preliminary hearing knew we were about to bear witness to one man's creation of hell at his Port Coquitlam pig farm after hearing about the evidence found on the scene. Police had uncovered countless bloodstains, missing women's clothing and IDs, bisected skulls, ground human meat, bones, and a gun with a dildo attached to the muzzle. Robert William, Willie, Picton was charged with murdering 26 women. He was convicted of 6 counts and sentenced to life in prison. In a jail cell conversation, he told an undercover police officer that he had killed 49 people. He was planning to kill one more and then take a break before continuing. Picton said he got caught because he got sloppy by the time he was arrested, for the last time, in February 2002. As we will see, it was not his first encounter with police on a violent charge. The downtown Eastside. It was in 1995 that Diana Melnick vanished, 11 years after a decision from BC Supreme Court's Chief Justice moved sex workers out of Vancouver's West End. That was after police began cracking down on strip clubs. That court decision began the slow push of street sex workers around the city until the trade became centered in the downtown Eastside, where drug use and alcoholism had been rampant for decades. As many have observed, governments and the courts played a significant role in creating the perfect hunting ground for a human predator. Between then and Picton's capture, almost 60 women's names joined Melnick's on the list of the missing. Before we go any further, let's have a look at Picton's background. The Picton family. The Picton family was somewhat infamous in Port Coquitlam. Their once large land on Dominion Avenue had slowly been sold off and built up with subdivisions. By 1995, it was a junkyard of machinery, old cars and trucks. Mounds of dirt testified to the family dirt moving business. With the pigpen roof fallen in, Picton would stuff pigs bought at auction into a horse trailer kept on site before he slaughtered them. An unpainted Dutch barn became the property's identifying feature as media cameras honed in on the farm after Picton's arrest. The land on which police descended on was owned by Picton, as well as his brother David and sister Linda Wright. She changed her name and left BC after her brother's arrest. Picton's upbringing cannot be described as normal. He was born in 1949 with the umbilical cord around his neck, which led to speculation he had brain damage. Mother Louise had rotten teeth, very thin hair, which she kept covered in a kerchief and chin hair that resembled a goatee. She generally wandered around in gumboots and a dress over blue jeans. Father Leonard was similar. Picton was put in special education classes, but he preferred the freedom of the farm, whose closest neighbor was the infamous Essendale Mental Hospital. One acquaintance described the place as a scene from the movie Deliverance. Cue the banjos. At about the age of 12, Picton saved $35 to buy a calf at auction. He treasured the animal, wanting to keep it the rest of its life. One day he came home and couldn't find the calf. After looking everywhere, likely at his father's suggestion, he looked in the barn. There hung the slaughtered calf. Another family tale involves his brother hitting a 14-year-old with a truck and their mother rolling the still-living youth into a slough, where he drowned. History of violence. Picton was known to working girls as a bad date by the mid-90s. Sarah DeVries, who vanished in 1998, had written about the missing women in her journal only 3 years earlier. Am I next? Is he watching me now? Stalking me like a predator and its prey. Her DNA was later found on Picton's farm. By 1997, Picton was picking up sex workers in the downtown Eastside and taking them to the farm. That same year, he was charged with the attempted murder of one woman. She injured him before escaping the property, and both wound up in the same hospital. Clothes seized from him that day would later yield DNA profiles of other missing women. Those charges were stayed, but an RCMP officer noted on a police database that Picton was a threat to women on the street. But by that time, women were regularly disappearing from the downtown Eastside. Many had been reported by the police, but with little follow-up. Coming from the downtown Eastside as a beat cop, Kim Rosmo became the first working Canadian police officer to earn a PhD in criminology. His concepts of geographic profiling were attracting attention from around the world. It earned him a promotion, but officers treated him like an outsider. At Vancouver Police Department, VPD, headquarters, the Old Boys Network shunned him. Rosmo suggested evidence of a serial killer at work. The department denied that was happening. About the same time, July 1998, VPD Detective Const. Lorimer Schenher became the lead investigator in the missing women investigations. Schenher has made no secret since of the frustration at having no resources and no support from senior management. Horrors on the farm. Things pretty well remained that way until the VPD and RCMP joined forces with Operation Even-Handed in 2000. De Vries' sister Maggie went to the Vancouver Police Board to ask for help, only to be told by Mayor Philip Owen, "We are not operating a locating service here." At the same time, the board approved a $100,000 reward for garage break-ins in a wealthy neighborhood. The missing women's families were infuriated, asking why property was more important than their children. That's when people began taking things into their own hands. Lynn Frey and sister Joyce LaChance began their investigation after Lynn's stepdaughter Marnie vanished in 1997. The two women eventually found their way to the Picton farm in 1998 and told police to look into Willie. Other family members also found their way to the farm that year without police help. Still, the disappearances continued. Picton was on the cops' radar. When the chance came via an informant's revelation that firearms were being stored improperly on the farm, a team went in via the back of the property and served a warrant to get into Picton's house trailer. Inside, they found women's clothing, IDs of some of the missing women and other items. Senior missing women's task force officers, who were listening to the radios at the farm's gate, ordered the search team out. A new warrant was applied for and police entered the property for what would become the start of the serial killer investigation. It was February 2002. Witnesses testify to Picton's violence as the property search began. Picton's court appearances in Port Coquitlam also began. Day after day, more charges would be laid until it hit 26 counts of murder. 11 months later, those in the courtroom for Picton's preliminary hearing began to hear the horrors of what had happened on his farm. However, it was covered by a publication ban so strict that even signals of U.S. TV stations were blocked for Canadians when a Picton story aired. In an article for the Associated Press, I mentioned that a videotape had been played. The judge warned me I would be ejected if I repeated such behavior. I made no mention of the fact that Picton confessed to the murders on the tape. In that preliminary hearing, day after day, we heard evidence of unimaginable horror, while Picton sat there calmly. We heard of police finding bisected skulls in buckets in freezers, hands and feet tucked inside. We heard of bags of human ground meat. We heard of a mattress soaked in a woman's blood. We heard the testimony of Andy Bellwood, who said Picton asked him if he wanted to go and pick up a sex worker. And we heard Bellwood's evidence that Picton said he would garrote the women while having sex with them. Then, Bellwood said, the dead women were taken to the barn. Picton would bleed them and gut them, feed some remains to the pigs. Other remains would go into barrels that were taken to a rendering plant in Vancouver. We heard the testimony of Lynn Ellingson. She was with Picton when he picked up a woman one night. Back at Picton's trailer, he went off with the other woman. Ellingson heard a noise and saw the light on in the slaughterhouse. Going to inspect, she walked in on a body hanging from a hook, a mass of hair on the table. Behind her, the door closed, and there was Picton covered in blood. The image from Ellingson's testimony seared in my mind is that of the dead woman's painted toenails. Picton warned her to keep her mouth shut, or she'd be hanging from the hook too, Ellingson told the court. The trial was not without its oddities. Pat Casanova helped Picton slaughter pigs at the farm. As Casanova testified about the butchering process, Picton's face registered a feral sneer, his skin red and tight across his skull, teeth bared. That sight horrified me. He looked like a rabid rat. Casanova's testimony was given in an almost mechanical tone as he had to keep a tracheotomy hole in his throat covered with his thumb to speak. And there was the day Picton's lead lawyer fell asleep for a few minutes, a snooze media wags called the $75 nap. Picton was found guilty of 6 counts of second-degree murder in December 2007. The decision was upheld as far as the Supreme Court of Canada. While 20 other counts were stayed, and there is potential evidence for even more charges, Picton received life in prison without the possibility of parole for 25 years. He is now in the Port-Cartier Maximum Security Prison in Quebec. Further reading the Picton file. Stevie Cameron on the farm. Stevie Cameron missing Sarah. Maggie DeVries bad date. The Lost Girls Vancouver's low track. Trevor Green lonely section of hell. The botched investigation of a serial killer who almost got away. Lorimer Schenher.